Broadcasting live from the Wake Forest Business Radio X studios in North Carolina, it's time for Metro Raleigh Business Radio, where business leaders in Raleigh come to tell their stories.
Hello, happy Monday. This is Anne Ravel-Petcher, your host for Metro Raleigh Business Radio. You're in the studio with our super producer, Reed Powell. Hey, Reed.
Hey, Anne. How are you?
I'm dandy.
Great.
Thanks so much. And you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Did you do anything fun this weekend?
I did a fun thing. I got to go see some friends in Greensboro.
Greensboro. That's got to be like an hour and a half from here?
Yeah, like an hour or something
yeah.
like that.
Oh, fun. Fun. I took a day off this weekend.
Great.
Yeah,
that's very
cool.
Important.
I know, right? It happens once a month or so. We have a really fun show today, Reed.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to
it. I bet you are. We have in the studio Joanna Rogerson. Joanna is with GemmaTouch. She's the founder and the CEO. We're really excited to hear what's going on with GemmaTouch. Hi, Joanna.
Hi, Anne. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. We also have David Hayden, who's with Smith Anderson Law Firm. Hello, David.
Howdy.
Good to have you here.
I'm glad to be here.
And
thank
you match
you.
The walls, so you know you look like you belong here. That's good, good, good. We also have Jason DeFritis with Green Resources. Hello, Jason.
Hello, Anne. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Glad that you're here. We're going to start the conversation with Jason, actually, talking a little bit about Green Resources. Tell us what Green Resources is.
Sure. We are an employment solutions firm, so essentially we help companies locate and land talent that's critical to their organizations, headquartered here in Raleigh, and have an office in Wilmington as well. We serve a number of types of industries and companies. The specific focus area that we have are in three separate recruiting divisions, and those are technology, mm-hmm. Types of positions, and manufacturing. Oftentimes, it's high-tech manufacturing.
Like sort of smart manufacturing.
Smart manufacturing, as we see that going, and what we call safe industrial as well. And then we do a lot under the business professional umbrella, so everything from HR, marketing, inside sales, support, administrative help as well.
Interesting.
Outside of that, we have a managed service division where we manage contract workforces generally for very large organizations that have an augmented workforce and a large contingent workforce that they need assistance managing.
What kind of work would that be?
Well, it can range. We've got some high-tech companies here in the area mm-hmm. that you know are very large in nature and have positions that range from a business analyst to a SaaS programmer all the way down through needing an individual to help at one of their office locations in the U.S. For 2 weeks while somebody's out on vacation. So,
oh, interesting.
You know, it's a widespread of positions.
But these are often very high-tech jobs, well-educated, well-trained positions.
Within our technology division, absolutely. We all, I'm sure, are hearing the companies that we are all fortunate to have in this community coming, like MetLife, moving
mm-hmm,
and opening
right.
Global technology operations centers, and you know many companies just like that moving even smaller in size. And so when they're coming here for a number of reasons. Primarily what we hear is quality of life, access
yeah.
to higher education, building a pipeline and a future leaders and talent, and cost, right? So
yeah,
when
right.
they're coming, though, there's a certain skill set they also need in the mid-management or highly technical arena.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're highly sought-after individuals right now. And so those organizations come to us to help not only sell their company, but sell Raleigh. So we're seeing a number of individuals relocating here to this area
sure.
For those types of opportunities.
It's interesting. Just because it's recruiting's been around for so long, it's pretty easy to understand how people come to you and why they come to you for those services. What about your services when you actually are employing the people on their behalf? How do they decide that it's important to come to you for those services?
As far as the individuals that we're working with, the candidates, is that
mm-hmm.
what you're referring to?
Mm-hmm.
The important thing for us is there are hundreds of recruiting firms here.
Sure.
In fact, I think there's about 300 just in this market.
Really?
Which you know is telling in regards to this area and how well we're doing. In regards to growth, it's important for us to know. The opportunity, right? Every company can likely take a technical skill set and match that up with a resume. In fact, technology can do that nowadays and align the two. But, you know, individuals want to know above and beyond that. They want to know the culture of the, you know, the environment they're going to. They want to know the personality of that hiring manager. They want to know the department's culture. And so, it, you know, for us, we really do a lot of due diligence on the front end of making sure that we go into a deep discovery dive with the companies we're working with and that we feel comfortable, you know, with that partnership and that we can represent and tell their story and identify and make that personality and culture match. Because in the end, that's, you know, those are the individuals who are going to grow within that organization, be promoted, and be there long term.
Right. You mentioned that there's a lot of technology available right now. Targeting your, actually, that's how I got into technology. I was actually, my first job in technology was installing Sperry systems with the networking for human resources.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, I go back a few years. But tell us about the kinds of technology people are using today to help make this easier.
Yeah, technology certainly evolved, you know, even the past 10 years in regards to the recruitment process. I mean, we've probably all heard about the, you know, companies like LinkedIn, right? And so, you know, certainly I've had hiring managers and individuals say, well, wow, are you going to be in business in 5 years? There's this thing called LinkedIn. And, you know, there's an enormous amount of work that still goes in. I mean, that's a great tool, an avenue to connect with people. But, you know, we're still dealing with people. And there's personalities. There's things that, that are drivers that we have to, you know, really you know, dig down into and make sure it's the right fit. But there's a number of technology tools that certainly we're utilizing to help in this process. I think for us, the biggest thing that we've seen help both our clients reduce the time to hire and our ability to connect with individuals has been video technology.
Oh, yeah.
We invested it probably earlier than maybe we needed to, but we saw the evolution of video technology. And so we invested in partnering with a company that is providing specific video resumes and video conferencing to our industry. So instead of a candidate being able to provide their, you know, old traditional paper resume, we now have the ability to also show, you know, that individual on video. So it's a more dynamic resume, if you will. They can still print the old resume, download it, save it, all the things you would do. But the individual has the ability to tell their story, you know, to give a little introduction, answer some job-specific questions. And so for that hiring manager, you know, that's seeing hundreds and hundreds of resumes, they can make a more educated decision to narrow their candidate pool down.
So that's something you do right in your offices?
We do. We have a live interview room in there that's specifically set up for video interviewing and creating video resumes. Candidates can do it at their house as well. All they really need is a web camera.
Sure. That's really interesting. There's a lot of companies here that are in major growth mode. Boy, I keep hearing more and more about this company needing another 400 people and this company needing another 200 people. You need a lot of talent. How are you helping companies find that talent right now?
Well, I mean, for us, we have to stay ahead of it, right? And so the tech, especially in the technology space, we have to know a lot about a lot of technologies and it changes, you know, weekly and daily. You know, in regards to that, certainly what we have seen over the past, I think, 3 years, even 5 years, is, you know, as the economies continue to improve, we've seen more companies that, you know, 3 or 5 years ago would have wanted every single line item requirement without much flexibility. Well, we're seeing that companies are needing to be a little bit more flexible and willing to, you know, maybe take two out of the five requirements and train the others that they don't have. Hot technology skill sets that are sought after right now are really anything that has to do with the technology, but then also the ability to communicate with the business user. So communication comes into play. I mean,
excellent.
Everything down from the coder that now needs to, you know, have some business analyst skill sets as well. Data intelligence is certainly a hot skill set, and really anything around the software development lifecycle, all the way, you know, from the project manager that's going to lead the software project through quality assurance.
Wow. What do you recommend to people? What do they need to know when they just have a lot of positions to fill? Anything specific? Would they consider maybe having contractors for a while? And is that a good opportunity for the job seeker to think about being a contractor for a while?
Absolutely. I think that we see a lot of companies that are looking at that as a way to quickly ramp up workforces and really kind of taking a step back, evaluating all of the positions and determining, you know, which positions are critical in nature and need to be hired immediately. and which positions possibly could they bring in a contract employee. And yeah, either maybe the workload is, you know, on their, you know, they can see it, you know, a quarter out, two quarters, but maybe it's project based and they may not need that team to do, you know, the work on the third quarter. So it may not make good business sense for them to, you know, invest in hiring those individuals full time. So we certainly see, you know, companies that have a large hiring need or augmenting that workforce. Some are doing it because they can't ramp up that team quick enough to bring in, you know, a full-time employee. So maybe they'll bring in some individuals that can help get through some of the items that they need done while mm-hmm. they continue to look for the full-time employees as well.
Yeah. And are the individuals considering contracting?
Absolutely. And, you know, interesting things that we see is, you know, a number of individuals that want to get into a new profession, maybe a new skill set, that, and they don't have a lot of experience. That's mm-hmm. a great avenue for them to do it because it gives them the opportunity to learn a new skill set, maybe learn.
And maybe prove themselves.
That's right. Prove themselves. And, you know, and also maybe it will validate, or maybe that will allow them to say, okay, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
And, but I tried and I didn't, you know, I didn't need to fully commit, you know, beyond this time frame. So we absolutely are seeing that. We're also seeing a number of individuals that have, you know, worked in a company 20, 30 years and, you know, now are not working there any longer and want to try something new. And this is a way for them to get, you know, their foot in the door at these companies.
Yeah, really interesting approach. So we know that tech talent's really tight right here, right now. We need a lot more, especially programmers is what I'm hearing, that we're missing that skill set. Outside of the programming end of the world, what's in high demand right now?
Really going back to any skill set there within technology, is more and more we're seeing the need for you know, analytical skills, so being able to connect with the business user above and beyond the technology, database, business intelligence, data warehousing.
Anything that has the word big data
big
in
data,
it, right?
Absolutely.
Or wireless.
Wireless. you know, additionally, mobile development, you know, continues to move more in the enterprise space, where we've seen, you know, companies that, you know, have products out there, have software that want to make that compatible on the mobile side and are, you know, then therefore looking for mobile developers as well.
Yeah. We're seeing a big uptick in manufacturing around here too, right?
Absolutely. And we do a lot in that space. And even, you know, we talk a lot about technology and we don't probably all think about manufacturing initially. And, you know, I've had the opportunity to tour many of the manufacturing facilities here in our area that are extremely high tech in nature.
Yeah.
And, you know, the workforce that they need does not look the same that it looked 10, 15 years ago. And so certainly within each of those facilities, there are some highly technical positions. And we've got great community colleges here like Wake Tech that are partnering with many of these companies to help produce, you know, individuals that have those technical skill sets and are ready to work.
Great. Well, if there's a company out there listening right now that might be able to use some of your services, how would they get in touch with you?
They can take a look at our website, and that's greenresources.com, green with an E at the end, or they can email me directly. My email is jason@greenresources.com, and our phone number is 919-862-8602.
Cool. Great. Thank you very much. Hang on for just a minute, because we're going to come back and chat with you in a minute, but I want to move over and talk to David Hayden, who's here with Smith Anderson. Hello, David.
Hey, how are you doing?
Thanks for sitting so patiently.
Oh, I was just enthralled listening to Jason talk about Green Resources. Gary Green, friend of mine, we're in the same Rotary Club. Think the world of him, so you're getting an extra endorsement here.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Excellent, excellent. That's the way we like it. Tell us a little bit about Smith Anderson. You guys have been around a little while.
Well, we just celebrated our 100th anniversary last year.
That's a big
deal. And that's a long time for any business, much less for a law firm. And we're downtown in the Wells Fargo building. We've got really just one location. We like to think we're one of the elder statesmen in terms of law firms in Raleigh, because we're a full-service law firm. Very attractive to me when I first joined the firm, because not only am I able to bring what I have in my toolkit, but I can reach out and grab anybody else in all the other areas that many of my clients or individuals might need at any given point in time. A lot of law firms are in multiple cities, especially big cities, and so whenever you want to talk to somebody who has different expertise from yourself, you have to get on the phone, get a conference call going, whatever. I usually can just walk down the hallway Yeah. And even though my area is government contracting primarily, I do a lot of things. But if we have issues with employment and labor law, which is usually the number one headache for every company owner, they'll tell you that the biggest thing that they have to deal with is making good hiring decisions. Oftentimes that will lead to a lot of headaches and have to seek help elsewhere to deal with that. And we've been very fortunate not only in with my clients in the government contracting arena, but those that have other issues. Maybe they want to buy a company. Maybe they want to sell a company. Maybe they want to sell assets. Maybe they have somebody that's taking them to court. We're a full-service firm. We're at one location. That keeps our costs down, our overheads lower, and we're able to pass that on to our clients. Mm. But we give them, I think, superb service. I've dealt with firms in D.C. and New York, and, in fact, a lot of our attorneys started out there.
Yeah.
And then they decided once they started having a family, they want to live somewhere where it's great quality of life.
Uh-huh.
And lo and behold, here they come back to Raleigh, North Carolina. And, you know, we've been the benefactors of that. And a lot of people don't realize just what sorts of talents that we have in our firm. My primary clientele are mainly contractors, government contractors, defense contractors, people dealing with the government at both the state and federal level. Mm-hmm. And we're able to provide a service to them that normally is only located up in the Washington, D.C. area.
Sure.
Right. And so one of my big sales pitch, I hate to use that term, but when you do talk to people, you have to let them know what it is that you bring to the table. And we're going to provide you the same quality government contracting services that you come to expect dealing with law firms in D.C., except we're going to bring North Carolina prices. That's a very attractive feature.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, tell us a little bit about the kind of client you have. Let's just talk about government contracting for a minute. What kind of clients, not necessarily by name, but are these all businesses? Are they individuals? Is it a particular industry that they're contracting with the government?
It could be any kind of federal agency. Here in North Carolina, we have such a large military presence. We do have a lot of companies that deal with the Department of Defense.
Oh, sure.
And especially in North Carolina, 90 out of our 100 counties have companies that provide government contracting, defense contracting services. Mm. And a lot of people don't realize that, especially some of our elected officials. And they don't realize the impact that cutback in funding might have across the state. And my clients can oftentimes be individuals who've left the military who are now starting a company because they have this expertise they developed over years of service, or else they've joined a company. And I deal with a lot of companies that are based in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the companies that I'm the general counsel for is one of the major defense contractors here in the state of North Carolina, and I'm still their general counsel. I just brought them as a client to the firm. But they have done tremendous work, not only here in the United States, but also overseas, both when we were in Iraq, but now when we're in Afghanistan, they're providing services over there. So that requires some unique skill sets that I think our firm's able to provide them when they need it.
Well, you have some defense background yourself.
Yes, I spent a few years in a green uniform, 29 years plus in the United States Army. A lot of that jumping out of airplanes at Fort Bragg.
Cool.
Still able to walk and talk. but when I retired in 2009, I wanted to go to a place that was, would have been great for my family. That was my first qualification, probably my only qualification. And since my wife was from North Carolina, that was an easy call.
Okay.
So we came here, and it's just been a tremendous experience for us from the day we got here. But at 29 years, I was an engineer and then a JAG officer for the most time, both
That's
here.
That's cool. So was that TV show anything close to real?
Well, they don't have any Army JAGs on there, so for that reason, I say it's not at all reality.
Okay.
when I was in Afghanistan, I was a senior lawyer in theater, and we had one of the actresses from that TV show came over with a USO tour, and she came up to me and said, "Oh, you're the JAG here in Afghanistan." I said, "Well, I have a whole office here. You need to meet them." And she asked me if it was just like the TV show, and I said, "I'm sorry, not hardly." Not until you put somebody from the Army in there, and then you actually have somebody who's actually downrange at that point in time. So,
well, you're really involved in the community here, and I applaud you for that. And one of the things that you're involved with is the NC Heroes Fund.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, about 2005, an individual in Charlotte, Scott Stone, who actually ran for mayor at one time recently, decided to create a fund to help veterans here in North Carolina. It's not a national organization. It's the North Carolina Heroes Fund. And what they do is provide grants of money to service members and their families who are experiencing temporary financial difficulties. Mm. You know, we're not a grandiose large fund nationwide, but we're spending 90 cents on the dollar to support these veterans, which is look at nonprofits, that's an extremely high ratio.
That's great.
So the money we get actually goes out and helps them make a car payment, make a mortgage payment, helps them, you know, keep the lights on. And you can't solve everybody's problem, but this is a niche that I saw wasn't being covered. And so when I joined this organization about 3 years ago, and I'm the vice chairman this year, and I'll be the chairman next year, we have had a direct impact on families that, you know, you see the result. And to me, that is extremely important, having served as long as I have, to have an opportunity to do something like that. And there's a lot of great veteran organizations out there, but this is one that struck me as covering a niche that hadn't been covered. We do two main fundraisers a year. We had Governor McCrory speak in Charlotte, our last one, and we're going to have General McNeil, who I was his attorney in Afghanistan.
Oh, wow.
Who is a president of a defense contractor.
Okay.
But he retired as a 4-star general, NC State graduate.
Ooh.
Has agreed to be our speaker on November 5th when we have our fundraiser this fall. And those are our two big fundraisers. But those are wow.
Where's that going to be?
That's going to be at Wake Med. They have a conference center there. And we'll be reaching out, and I will reach out to Gary Green to be one of my sponsors, among other CEOs and presidents. It's important, and it's something I feel very strongly about.
You're also part of the Defense Business Association of North Carolina. How strong is the defense industry here for us as a business community?
Well, it is a tremendous asset to North Carolina. There are, in the North Carolina Defense Business Association, about 260 companies here in North Carolina who have over 100,000 employees. It's a trade association. I've been on the board now for several years. I'm the vice chair this year, and I'll be the chairman in another year. And
you're going to be busy the next few years on these chairs.
I've been busy since the day I started West Point. I haven't slowed down since, and that's the only speed I know. But what I will tell you is that this organization does have provides a great service to companies that want to do defense business or government contracting, because it's a networking organization, and we have multiple networking events during the course of the year. We also reach out to our elected officials to advocate on behalf of our membership. And as I said, it's a big force, and it's been getting a lot of attention from congressmen and senators. For example, when they were voting on sequestration last year, they asked for a position, and we were able to provide them one that was, I think, important in their decision making.
That's great. Okay. The last major thing you're involved with here that we're going to talk about today anyway is going to be the Rotary Club. Tell us about your involvement there and why.
Well, I have to start off with coming back here to North Carolina in 2005. In the military, you move every 2 to 3 years, and you really can't contribute to your community. And I think contributions to a community are important and essential, not only for individuals, but for businesses.
Agreed.
And when I first got here, I was with my son as an assistant scout leader in his Boy Scout troop, and several of the other dads were in this Rotary Club, and I had me come talk to them, and next thing you know, you're a member, and next thing you know, you didn't take a step back when they were looking for volunteers, and you're the volunteer, and next thing you know, you're the president. I've really enjoyed that organization because it's not just locally focused, it's internationally focused.
Yeah.
So we support international projects, primarily eradication of polio, which we fortunately just had have declared India as free of polio. But we do a lot of local community projects. Our club, of which Gary Green is an outstanding member, we We do a very large fundraiser each year to raise money for not only our own Steyer scholarship. We provide a $4,000 a year scholarship to eligible candidates, and they get that every year for 4 years once mm-hmm. they're selected.
Right.
But we also provide funds to Fostering Bright Futures, which is another nonprofit that provides scholarships to foster children.
Oh, cool.
And that's one niche in our society. It probably doesn't have the parental support that other mm-hmm. other young graduates of high school would have going to college. And so we're able to raise $50,000, $60,000 with that golf tournament every year. And we look for sponsors for that as well. I'm always looking for sponsors. I can see people shutting the
Get
door now when I come up
on.
To them. but those are the types of community things that have meant a lot to me since I've been back here. But, you know, it also allows me to meet a lot of folks in other capacities that develop the kind of relationships and trust that I think is a good starting point for any kind of business relationship in the future.
Absolutely. I think that developing that trust, especially when you're looking for a legal representation, is really, really critical. So if somebody is looking for either legal representation or wants to help out by sponsoring some of your other activities, how do they find you?
Well, you can go to smithlaw.com and look under professionals and last name Hayden, David, it'll be there. I have a phone number at the office, 919-821-6755. Either way, you can reach out to me. My email is on there as well, and love to have any opportunity to assist that I can.
Great. Thanks for assisting us by being on the show today. Now we're going to chat with, finally, Joanna's over here going, I'm all teed up now. I'm all excited about chatting.
Hydrated.
All hydrated. We have Joanna Rogerson, who, again, is the CEO of Gamma Touch. And Joanna, tell us a little bit about your company.
Yeah, so Gamma Touch is a early stage startup company. We have a solution for the oncology industry. We help providers and specialty pharmacies to better connect with and monitor their patients when they're away from the clinic and while they're on treatment.
That's interesting. How do you do that?
So it's almost like a two-sided solution, believe it or not. So it's a ordinary web app. You can access it from any device, Android, iPhone, tablet computer.
Okay.
On the provider and the pharmacy side, it's a simple triage dashboard. You can see what all of your patients are doing at any time. And by what they're doing, I mean if they're taking their medication and how they're feeling, symptoms and side effects. And then on the consumer side, so the patient or the cancer fighter side, we also have a very simple dashboard where every day they just kind of check in, say how they're feeling. If they're taking their medication or not, and we have a hardware solution that links to their pill bottles. It's proximity-based. Right now we're using NFC. We're hoping to expand into Bluetooth in the next 10 to 12 months. So when they get nearby, we can push notifications from them, from their provider.
To their phone or their tablet, whichever.
Yeah,
that's really interesting.
Yeah, and there's a whole support program that goes along with that, so we tailor each individual quote-unquote app that each person sees to that person. So it's very, very cool. It's completely personalized. You're not getting a blanket app that every other cancer fighter is getting. You're getting the program just meant for you based on your engagement level, the side effects that you're receiving, things like that.
What got you interested in doing this?
Yeah, so that's quite a story. We founded Gamma Touch as an excited first-time entrepreneur working in corporate America, hoping to rule the world and start my own thing. We won an NCIDEA grant, which was an amazing experience and enabled us to build an early prototype. After roughly, I'd say a year, we decided, you know, after bootstrapping, we decided, let's quit our job and see how this goes. And it went very slowly. So we were talking about this earlier, and this is where I kind of jump in and I...
And when you say slowly, you don't mean the development was slow.
No, I mean, the development went well. I'd say the customer piece was much slower, as well as investment. So that has to be kind of a sign to entrepreneurs, and it was definitely a sign to us that something had to give. And this is where I chime in and I say embrace the pivot to other entrepreneurs. So we had a moment where we had to say, what are we going to do next? Are we going to shut this down? Are we going to plow through and figure out how we can take what we've learned over the last year and transition it into something? You know, there's two criteria: that was a large enough market to support it, and two, that I felt really passionate about. You know, enough with this excited first-time entrepreneur thing. I have to really love it and believe in it. My background is in healthcare. I'm a molecular biologist by training, and I've spent all of my time in healthcare. And mm-hmm. so it was a really natural fit for me to explore how we could take what we developed and position it correctly for this particular niche.
So where were you before you pivoted? What were you? How were you presenting your solution then?
We were a hardware company, so we were completely focused in NFC technology.
Okay.
So we know a lot about NFC. The challenge that we, or the mistake that we made, was focusing so strongly and riding one pony so hard.
Right.
NFC was it for our company, mm-hmm. and that was the biggest mistake we made. Since the pivot, we've completely opened ourselves up to all types of technologies and dramatically narrowed the market focus.
That's really interesting. You dramatically narrowed your focus in terms of the cancer too. You're only working with oral.
That's right.
That's interesting.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
We're only working with, right now, we're only working with cancer fighters who are on oral-based treatments. So a lot of people have been affected by cancer, mm-hmm. and we all know that you typically go into
chemo,
the hospital.
And radiation.
That's right. You get a port in your arm and you get something dripped into it mm-hmm. once a week. So that's changing a little bit, which is really cool for cancer patients. They get their freedom back, and their chemotherapy comes in a little pill bottle that gets mailed to them every 30 days.
Wow.
So you have your life.
Yeah.
The challenge there is you don't have contact with your doctors or your nurses as often. You're at home fighting this disease with all you have, and you're not getting that high touch that you would be getting if you're going in for your bag of chemo every week. So it's tough. And typically the adherence plans are very complicated. You're getting really nasty symptoms because they're often very targeted treatments. Mm-hmm. There's a sad story that goes along with that. We talk to cancer patients all the time. And there was this one lady that we were introduced to. Her name was Margaret. And she was, you know, the typical grandmother that you always imagine your grandmother to be. She did her hair every time she went out. Had to be perfect. Her nails matched her blouse.
Oh, my.
And she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and she described her experience as being placed in a dome. She had no idea how to communicate. She wasn't sure if she should call her doctor, if she shouldn't call her doctor. Mm-hmm. And the time that she felt most cared for by her care providers was when her surgeon gave her a notebook, just a simple little notebook about what she could expect. So it ended up that Margaret came down with a really nasty blood clot in her arm because she wasn't sure if it was a symptom worth you know, calling to the attention of the nurse.
Sure.
She's at home by herself. Her husband had passed away, so doesn't have a support system in place. And so there's really nasty things that happen, and it blew my mind that cancer is so prevalent and there's not technology in place to help the providers manage these people remotely mm-hmm. and get efficiencies from that. And people like Margaret are at home fighting as hard as they can, and they just can't connect. And it's such a simple, you know, there's easy ways to make that happen.
From a business perspective, how do you make that happen? Who do you sell this to?
Yeah. So since we're just focusing on oral treatment plans, we work directly with this group of pharmacies called specialty pharmacies.
Mm-hmm.
So these are typically pharmacies that sell very expensive drugs.
Sure.
But the patients that they see are typically very high touch. They want to have a really personal relationship with the patient. So it's a newer model than, you know, you typically go to Target and get your you get your pills and you're not really sure who your pharmacist is.
Right.
This is a little different. They want you to know who they are. And so we've worked directly with the pharmacist to kind of co-develop the product that we have now.
Where are these pharmacists? Are they like geographically located near the patients? Are they remote?
They're actually geographically located by the provider, which is really great.
That's interesting.
So their oncologist and their pharmacist are typically under the same roof.
Okay.
Or within a short drive of one another. But yeah, they're popping up all over the U.S.
So your company, from the very first time I ever met you, you were just packed full of energy and new ideas. When you come up with a new idea, how do you test your products? How do you test the idea to see if it's viable?
Yeah, so even though we're selling and working directly with the pharmacist, mm-hmm. we have a consumer-facing, a big consumer-facing piece.
Right.
So everything we do, everything we change, we work directly with cancer fighters. One example is just yesterday, we were working with the Livestrong teams that are here.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be current cancer fighters or survivors, and we ask them to use our tool. What do you think? What do you hate? What do you love? Just tell us your story. So everything gets run by cancer fighters.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
You've had some really interesting lessons that you've learned over the last 2 years. Tell us about the time that you went to Nashville to the Accelerator program. What'd you learn from that?
Yeah, so this was, just to bring you back a little bit and give you some history, this was right at the time of our pivot. This is right when we were deciding, you know what, how are we going to plow forward?
Mm-hmm.
We got accepted into an accelerator program called HealthBox, which is a wonderful accelerator program for early stage startups looking to get into the healthcare industry.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect because it's not a blanket accelerator program. It's very specific to healthcare. They have amazing partners, and one big piece from that we took away from that is we got great industry partners on board. So I mentioned we've been co-developing with the specialty pharmacies and the oncologist,
mm-hmm.
and we wouldn't have been able to get those introductions if not for folks like HealthBox who have kind of already vetted us and said, you know, these people are okay. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Tennessee has been another amazing partner of ours since being accepted into that program, which you wouldn't have gotten at a non-healthcare focused mm-hmm. accelerator program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are you still in beta?
We're in closed beta.
You're in closed beta. So mm-hmm. people can't actually say, I want to play. Or can they?
They can, yeah.
They can be a tester also.
If they come to me.
Well, then let me ask you before we go into how to come to you. Tell me why you came back to Raleigh. I was afraid we were going to lose you to Nashville there for a while.
Yeah. No, we do a lot of traveling now. But no, we came back. It's really the community. I mean, it's these guys. It's people that are all around us. It's the support network that's here. We love the city. I think there's a real opportunity, especially within the healthcare space, to get the scientists and the engineers mm-hmm. that are in our awesome universities out. We're hosting a Triangle Startup Weekend.
I was going to ask about that. Tell us a little bit more about that, the details surrounding that.
Yeah, so there's been so many Triangle Startup Weekends the last year or so, maybe a year and a half. And they're great events. Many people already know about them, but they're amazing events for kind of community building, light idea generation. You all meet on a Friday evening, spill your ideas, form teams, and within 54 hours, you're expected to pitch that idea and, in effect, form your company.
Right.
The challenge has been that there hasn't been one that's been specifically focused for healthcare. And we thought, well, my God, there's amazing academic institutes. There's
huge uptick in the market.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And there's the CRO world is booming here.
Right, absolutely.
So why are we not doing this? So a couple of entrepreneurs and I said, you know, let's change that. Let's start this thing this week, this particular weekend. And so we're holding the first healthcare Triangle Startup Weekend on August 8th at the American Underground at Maine.
Oh, good.
Yeah, and actually, if anyone's interested who's listening in, we're having a pre-event. We had such an amazing sponsorship event, you know, before this, and we've had great sponsors come on board that we decided let's do a kind of celebration pre-event, and that'll be at Motor Co. on this Wednesday from 6 to 8.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, completely free. Free drinks, free apps. We want to spread the word about the weekend.
And that's appetizers, not mobile apps.
Right.
There may be free mobile apps, too. Who knows?
Yeah. You never know.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, if you're listening and you want to get in either on these tests or learn more about the trials at I'm in Touch, how did they get in touch with you?
Yeah. And if there is anyone listening who we're doing a second round of pilots in the next 6 months, and we'd love to have a whole new crew on board, you can email me directly, and that's Joanna@gematouch.com, and that's spelled G-E-M-A. touch.com. You can contact us through our website, just like these guys just mentioned, www.gemmatouch.com. But email is probably the fastest.
Okay, that's great. Thanks, everybody. It was a really great show today. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate you being here and getting the word out about your businesses.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ann.
Thanks.
And this is Ann Ravel-Petcher. Until next time, for Metro Raleigh Business Radio.